session number 12168, rule 4.
Mr. Simpson, rule 4.
We've got to have a whip and use it on the people who have been in charge there, the guards or whatever have you. But I don't think anybody ever took advantage of that. At least I didn't. After it was all relieved and everything was settled down and all these people being hospitalised, they went down into the camp for a ceremony to set fire to the huts. The German SS women who were still there, the men had been marched off, but the German SS women who were still there had been made to scrub these huts out, and then they came along with flamethrowers and burnt the huts down. So that was one little retribution for what they'd done.
So you didn't see any beating of any Germans?
No, no, not at all, no. The British soldiers not like that somehow. I don't think they could bring themselves to do it, or at least very few of them couldn't. I don't think British are made like that somehow.
Did any of the inmates speak to you or tell you of any of their experiences?
They were all foreigners from Eastern Europe, you know, and Jews. There was only just occasionally one that could speak English, very, very occasionally.
Do you remember anything that was said to you?
Only that they were very, very relieved to me, you know. General sentiments. The Red Cross came and came with clothing and that kind of thing after we'd been there a few weeks and dishing clothing out and helping around, you know, and they gradually kitted out some of the people, but we left before it was all properly cleared up. There was one thing that there was a main road through the camp which was called Adolf Hitler Way, and they changed it to Colonel Johnson Way, and that was the name of our commanding officer.
Do you remember any British medical students coming in to help?
No. Yes. Dame Laura Knight. She came to me one day, and I was introduced to her as Dame Laura Knight. I didn't know her from Adam, you know. She was a stranger to me, and she was introduced to me as Dame Laura Knight. She said she wanted to come and make some sketches of people being washed and de-loused. So I said, "Yes, certainly, come with me." I said, "But first, you'll have to be powdered the same as everybody else's, you know. Every morning we used to spray powder on ourselves, this DDT stuff, to stop the lice from, you know, kill the lice." So she says, "Oh, that's all right." So I had a spray gun, and I sprayed her under her arms and hair and around her body, and I said, gave her the gun. I said, "Here, you'll have to do yourself down below, because I don't think you'd like me to." She said, "Get on with it, lad." So I spread her with the DDT. That was just from a little incident. Everybody was sprayed religiously. Well, I mean, naturally, you were crawling if you didn't.
Did you see any piles of property which had been taken from the
Yes, rings, jewels, watches, whatever have you. In fact, I got two or three watches myself, but they weren't much good because I'd all been poured over before I got there, but there was rings and jewellery, watches, piles and piles of it in a store.
Where was the store?
Just off the main camp.
Were there any children in Belsen?
No. Youngest I think was about 16 or 17 that had been there for some time. No children.
Was there a crematorium?
No, Belsen wasn't a place where they did this burning and gassing. They didn't do that there, they just systematically starved them to death, that's all they did.
Did you suffer psychological damage or nightmares because of having worked there?
I suppose so, but not bad enough to complain about it.
Did German civilians come round and see the place?
No. No, they weren't allowed anywhere near it. If you can visualise it, there's two towns, one is Belsen and the other one's Bergen. And it was in between these two towns and about 10 kilometres apart, and it was right in the middle in a big wooded area. And there was no sign of life anywhere around in the surrounding districts. You had to go quite a way before you came across a civilian house or dwelling of any kind.
Some people say that no birds sang in.
That's true. There were no bird songs. It was deathly quiet. Coming through the woods, it was complete silence. It was eerie.
Did it change your attitude towards German people?
Aye, very much so. I couldn't imagine how. And yet, when I came back into Germany, all the people who you told about it absolutely denied that such a thing could happen. And very convincing, of course. They were convinced that such a thing couldn't happen.
Do you think they were being genuine? Do you think they were being genuine in saying that?
Yes, I think most of them were, yes. There probably some of them that knew about it, but, they dismissed it as rumours. Then I went off into Denmark.
Can you tell me about the liberation of Denmark?
I can't tell you about the liberation of Denmark because, as I say, we, at that time we went into Denmark, it was June the 1st. It was my birthday, so I remember that particularly. And we went into Denmark and we got to a place called Snohøj, which was near Fredericia in Jutland. There we went into a big school which was evacuated by the Danes to let us have it. And
was this the whole of your unit?
Yes, the whole of the unit. And there was a bridge near it called the Lillebæltsbron, and this was guarded by Danish underground, and they were stopping all Germans that went over the bridge. A lot of Germans tried to cross the bridge to get back into Germany, of course, and it was a main road into Germany. It wasn't. No, it was from the island of It was from Jutland into Finn. That's right. But anyway, they're stopping Germans and putting them in sort of a concentration camp that they had on the outskirts of Fredericia. And they helped us quite a lot. They said, what would you like? Some anything that you've been missing, you know, you're short of food and that kind of thing. But they said, well, we'd like some eggs. Next morning in the sergeant's mess there was a crate of eggs. You know how they used to pack crates of eggs up in dozens, great long boxes, wooden boxes. With, I don't know how many hundred eggs they contained, but that was delivered to the sergeant's mess next morning. And we practically lived on eggs for a time. with, of course, we had plenty of rations. At that time, we weren't short of food, but we'd never had any eggs. Anyway, we had a good stay in Denmark. We went on a victory parade in coaches around from Fredericia around the island of Fjum, Finn, as they call it.
We call it Funen.
Yeah, well, Fjum or Fjum and Finn, they call it Finn anyway. Went round the island and toured Enser in that area, round the villages, and everywhere we went we were showered with flowers and gifts and fruit and much wine and whatever have you as you wanted, and finished up all morally drunk by the end of the day. That was a little trip out, and then we did a march through the town of Fredericia, and went to the barracks outside on the outskirts of Fredericia, the Danish soldiers' barracks on the outskirts of Fredericia, where we had a lunch, and Crown Prince Frederick came. He was Crown Prince at that time, his father was king, and he came and he shook hands with us all and asked us what we'd been doing. And he said to me, he said, have you had enough food, Sergeant? I said, yes, thank you, sir. I said, anything you like? I said, another bottle of beer. Now, beer was very scarce at that time in Denmark. Not, it isn't now, but it was at that time. So he said, he called one of the waiters over and told him I wanted a bottle of beer. And he had one with me in good health, you know. He could speak English very well. That was, he became King of Denmark, of course. We did the victory parade. As I said, that was the end of the victory parade. Stayed there for some months. Well, what would it be, about 6 weeks. And then was posted back into Germany. The unit was more or less split up. Some of them were going on to Berlin, and because I was of the age group that was nearing discharge, I was sent back into Germany and went back into Wurbergen in Germany near Hamelin.
Why had you gone into Denmark?
Why?
To treat the Danish civilians?
I was given a holiday. We were given a holiday, not them.
Sorry, I interrupted you with you saying you went to the Hamelin area of Germany.
Yeah.
Place. What happened there?
Well, nothing. It was just a matter of waiting to come back home, you know, parades and whatever, and a bit of the usual routine of marching up and down and all that kind of thing. Only that there was a curfew and we had to pull people in who broke the curfew and threaten them if they did it again, then go to the Russian front, and that was it.
But the war was over by
then. The war was over, but the Russians were, they were still mortally afraid of the Russians with the Germans, more so than the British.
Do you think they had cause to be frightened of them?
Oh, yes, I'm sure they were. Yeah.
What were relations like with the German civilians in the Hamelin area?
They were quite all right. They didn't bother you at all, and we didn't bother them. What our job was at that time was we used to unload hospital trains that were coming back from the Russian front and from all the fronts, and take off stretcher cases and put them on into ambulances to take them to German hospitals up and down Germany. And that was the end of the war, as far as I'm concerned, because I was demobilised soon after that.
What was the name of the place where you were stationed near Hamelin?
Werbergen, I think that was the name of it.
How do you spell it?
Werhbergen.
Was there any disorder in that area from displaced persons?
No. It was on the side of the river Weser, and the river has high cliffs at one side, particularly the opposite side to where we were, and there's a road cut into the side of the cliff, and a lot of Germans soldiers who had been sent home were marching along this road, and I'll never forget them one evening, just as about dusk, and they were marching along this road and they were singing Lily Marlene.
Why was it so unforgettable?
Well, it sounded so eerie, you know, as though you didn't expect them to be singing, because they were so downtrodden, so upset by the end of the war, and expected them to, I suppose, they sang on the march, same as all British troops do. But it sounded quaint, and it came across the river. Sounded quite good, as a matter of fact, quite nice.
Was there a non-fraternisation order in force in Germany?
There was, yes, but it didn't bother us.
So you just ignored it, did you?
Hmm?
You just ignored the order?
No. Well, personally, I didn't. I wasn't bothered. But some of the lads tried to get on with the German girls. Most of the German girls are respectable ones anyway, wouldn't have anything to do with soldiers.